Hey, everybody, welcome back to the show floor of Connected America 2025 here in Irving, Texas. Today we're talking all sorts of topics, but right now we're focused a little bit more on the rural side of the industry, especially as we talk about last mile connectivity and all sorts of challenges that pop up whenever you start rolling out fiber infrastructure to really that end of the line on the rural side of things. And to talk about that, I've got Lance White from KGB Co. Lance, good to have you on.
Hey, thank you very much.
You know, Lance, for our audience members who don't know you, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do at KGP.
Well, I'm from a small town in East Texas. I went to work at the telephone company when I was about 23 or 4 years old, and I worked there for a long time. And then I worked from a nighttime dispatcher to pretty much doing business development and helping every department. And then we went on to Corning, and I worked at Corning for a few years. I became a CEO at Grayson Collin Communications and worked there for years, and then I thought I was going to quit and hang out at home, and KGP came and said, hey, we want to target some electric companies, and since you were a CEO of an electric-owned communications, why don't you come and help us? And so I came back for a couple years, and now 6 years later, I'm still here.
Well, hey, and I'm glad that you did, because it gave us a chance to meet some commonalities in the regions of Texas. But the cool thing, especially talking about our conversation today, is that Texas, you get to see sort of the largest of large rollouts, especially with folks like AT&T and Frontier being headquartered here. But you also have those rural applications. So we really get a lot of use cases here in Texas. So I want to ask, you know, when we talk about rural connectivity, right, it's sort of been, I like to call it the last mile, right, because it truly is really the end of the line for a lot of folks. And, you know, what are some of the challenges that we're currently facing from getting that last mile, that last mile out to the rural communities?
Well, of course, you got to take the first thing would be funding, because it's hard to build miles of fiber to receive 2 to 3 customers. So you spend $70,000 to get a mile for a customer that's going to pay you $50 to $100 a month. And so therefore, your funding is going to be it. Next, you got to have a good workforce area. And in small rural America, you may not have enough in the pool to have enough workers and contractors. Things boil down to being able to keep people busy working, growing it. And then the funding comes from the government or whatnot. And then therefore, you can actually build and give that quality of life that the people in rural America may not have. They'd like to do telemedicine from home, and they would like to do go to college from home, you know, and they can work from home, which all those things will eventually boost your economy, and then rural may grow into more of a suburban type area.
Yeah. Well, out of curiosity too, I mean, obviously you see things like Starlink and satellite connectivity that have existed. Those types of technologies have existed for a while. Why is now the right time to make that hop from maybe some of those wireless and cell or 5G or satellite-driven technologies really to a robust fiber infrastructure network?
Yeah, I would think that most people would say, you know, latency issues is a bad thing. The bandwagon getting too big on the wireless. If you put a sector up somewhere, you can only put a number of customers on that wireless sector. And if not, you'll oversubscribe it and you'll get poor service. And then when you're trying to watch your Netflix or trying to download your show, you see the buffer and it's just buffering. So I think when you get the largest pipe out there, fiber's going to have to go. And it used to be the biggest pipe is what wins. And as the whole world starts growing and stuff, the further the reach of that, then the bigger development. I mean, we're not getting smaller.
Right.
America's just getting bigger. So you're going to have those places someday may be an economic development area that needs to have the facilities there to do it. You see these, and I know AI is a big thing, but now like in the middle of Louisiana somewhere, they're going to do a large, huge Facebook type AI. Then Abilene, Texas is going to have a big one. It may already be there, but so they're going to have to get out there into the area. And so those satellites are great, but sometimes the cost of those are really high to pay. I did look at one and it was like a large down payment. Had to pay a penalty for congestion. I was like, what? Yeah, it's $125 extra for congestion. But if you can build fiber there, you can reach more people. The infrastructure just keeps going and it's not limited.
Yeah. Well, you sort of talked about data centers and things like that. And obviously space is a little bit cheaper in some of these more rural areas. Power is a little bit more readily available. You can build your own infrastructure and, you know, work through co-ops and work through smaller ISPs and things like that. But, you know, when you think about sort of this rollout, it's been easy. And again, using Texas as an example, it's been easy to think a little bit more short term, right? Where, hey, we need to get these folks connected. But hey, you don't want to double up on that infrastructure build cost. How do you think a little bit more long-term? Maybe it's data centers, maybe it's businesses and residential growth. How do you think a little bit more long-term solution or problem solving than maybe some of that short-term, hey, we just got to get a pipe out to the 15 people that live in that area now?
Well, I think the long-term deal is building a fiber infrastructure all over, because I mean, the speed of light is fast. The amount of data they can send down that pipe is a lot. I think satellites and wireless is a good idea. I've even utilized that before when I worked at Grayson Collin. We luckily had a 90-foot pole. And so I could put a 90-foot pole in a neighborhood, shoot wireless to it, saturate the neighborhood, and get the customers. And then as we build fiber to them, we could pull the pole up, go to another location, fiber them, $10 more a month, you give them fiber to the home. So things like that, just it seems to be the further the fiber goes out in the world, the better off it's going to be in the long run for the future, instead of, you know, just throwing up a quick fix that technology is going to be gone. So, I mean, some of the wireless stuff that we started with today is obsolete. They were started with this spectrum and that spectrum, and then a 700 spectrum, and then now it's millimeter spectrum. So, I mean, it's getting so saturated in that area, but I feel it's a great product, but it's not always the long-term fix.
Yeah.
But I feel fiber is, fiber in your meal, long-term effect, good health.
Well, I'll tell you, it's interesting. You know, you have these conversations, and I think we're at a point now where the smaller ISPs are rolling some of this infrastructure out. We saw that, obviously we see that all the time in Texas, but you know, I want to ask about sort of the co-ops, right? Folks that really have relied primarily on the electricity side of things. Do you see them taking accountability maybe for some of these rural applications instead of the local regional ISP?
I've seen that. I have several instances of that. That's what Grayson Collin did. They saw that, and there's so many benefits that you can do when you have a utility like that. You joint trench, so your trenching cost is divided, so you could put water, fiber, electric. Whoever's on the bottom is the best because they don't get cut first.
Right.
But this ability is just that the electric company already has a pool of customers that are loyal to them. They've built the power to continue to serve them and to be sustainable and not lose power. And then they know how to hang wire. They have an infrastructure, a right-of-way already. They have a billing system, so it's usually relatively easy for them to convert over. They're about 95% there, you know, and then all they got to do is learn a new, safer technology than electric. I've seen one of my customers in Jacksonville, Rush, Texas, Cherokee Electric. They decided to do it. They tried to get the RDOF money, and it didn't make it. So their board and their team said, you know what, we're just going to build it for our members. And so they started on November of like 21 22, and by the 1 year later they had 2,500 customers. 2 years later they're up to 5,000, and they're going to eventually this year finish out all their membership. And now they have a really good internet gigs to the home. It's probably cheaper than a lot of others are, and it's, you know, for their members. And so that's what co-ops were built for,
right?
And that's why they have a membership. So,
well, a lot of times too, when you talk co-op, I mean, obviously you talk about laying things in the trench and making sure that everything's set up. A lot of times you talk about places that have co-ops, they have some electrical, they have some light plumbing, depending on where you are. How do you say, maybe your co-op, small ISP, how should folks approach that conversation? Maybe from not a retrofit standpoint, but maybe from a, hey, we're trying to build on top of existing infrastructure. Maybe we've got copper already to the home. How do they kind of build on top of that with some of that existing infrastructure?
Well, if the best case scenario would be if an ISP or a telephone co-op and an electric co-op would come together and say, hey, let's work together and build this for the people in our community.
The contractor loves that too, by the way.
Yeah, right. Yeah, for sure. So that's the best scenario. But, you know, sometimes, you know, people are limited to funding, and that's where it comes to. And then sometimes people are limited to getting into partnerships, or they just don't want to do another business unit in their company. So the best thing to do would be for them to work together. And I think that was one of the things you and I talked about, is like, is public and private working together. And if they can do that, I mean, there's so many things that they can do. I know I had one school that wanted to get fiber to all their schools, but they didn't want to maintain it and continue it. So they worked with a communications company, and they fibered it all, hooked the schools up. School paid for it, but they manage it, run it, and then you pay a maintenance fee every month. And so it works out both ways. Now the company that built it can lateral out and serve the communities. So it's a win-win for everybody when they can do that.
Well, it is, and it's interesting. It's one of the conversations we're having here on the show floor is you're seeing sort of an increased demand for those private networks, right? Because people want to manage it. People want to have their own digital assets as well, whether it's digital twinning, making sure that they've got all their stuff so they can maintain it properly. You know, whether it's the data centers that want to own all of their fiber infrastructure. Hey, maybe it's a farmer out in a rural county that wants to manage their own infrastructure and then distribute it locally as well, right? You know, how have you seen that balance of the private and public network? Obviously, you just talked about sort of the education side, but what are some of those other use cases that you've seen where people maybe want to sponsor their own subset of a fiber network?
Usually, larger companies and stuff like a data center or an AI center, they'll want to utilize the public to get there, or the public wants to bring them there, so they'll build it there, and then they'll lease the dark fiber in order to expand economic development in their area. And then therefore, like I said, well, it's a win-win. They both have what they want. And one person that may have had the private equity money helped the city be able to get it done, or the county or whatever it may be. I know that funding is the big thing. And also that I've seen in rural America is that they'll look at, okay, this company is getting this money to build in our area, or this private equity company is coming to build in our area. But then all of a sudden, the rural America that had $5 pole attachments or certain permitting is now $150 pole attachment and $500 permitting, et cetera. I don't know those numbers, but I'm just saying that it's all of a sudden a lot of hands come out when you start, but you've got to go in with a great deal where you see that it's an asset that the city needs to infrastructure, and it'll help them. But let someone at the private company build that infrastructure, and then they can use it, and they'll give you a piece of it to make the whole thing work as a circle.
Yeah. Well, look, as the opportunities continue to grow from the infrastructure and fiber and telco side of things, those demands don't go away in the city, right? So there's more demand than ever. So as you go to these more rural applications, sometimes the staffing and the workforce isn't there. So you make your order and you can't get the fiber in time, or you don't have the staffing, or, you know, talk about some of those challenges that the demand, you know, has created maybe from a staffing and workforce standpoint.
So in rural America, I mean, it's hard to keep good contractors around because, believe it or not, some of them do chase a dollar, and then they're getting $7 a foot here, and then they found out that some guy down the road is paying 10. And it's the same way with farming. You're out here farming, and you got a good hand, and then someone takes them. So you need to have a good supply chain. You need to have that, and that supply chain can continue to make sure you have your product there so everyone works every day. Because if you have downtime, then people will fluctuate away, and then therefore product shows up, there's no one to put it in the ground or in the air, and you're getting behind on schedule, and you have timelines and phases so you can get a return on your investment. And so you got to make sure that you have the, you know, your funding, your engineering, your supply chain, and your labor. And labor is the biggest portion these days. And, you know, everybody's double salary, inflation got bigger and bigger. So now you're going to have to pay people a little more money, and you're going to have to keep them busy or you'll lose them.
Well, that's assuming we can get them into the industry, right? We're about 5 to 10 years away. We already see a significant challenge with recruiting already anyway, but we're 5 to 10 years away from the biggest industry exodus that we've seen ever in our industry. You know, what are some of those challenges that you've seen from a recruiting and retention standpoint? Maybe it is paying, maybe it's salary, but what are some of those industry recruitment challenges?
Really interesting. I was talking to a fellow in the show a while ago, and I was asking him some questions. Super engineering guy, really smart. And he goes, you know, my deal is I know how to build it, and we build it right, and we know it works. Now I have to find these 18 to 25 year old, you know, kids or youth.
We'll call them kids. It's okay.
To come in. And first I got to figure out a way to make them care that what they're doing, it's not just a job, it actually means something, right? And then I got to figure out how to train them to talk to the public. and to talk, because they're 80% of my business. These people that have to sell it and distribute it and install it in the homes. So finding those people and then, you know, giving them that ability to really have pride and integrity in their work is a challenge these days. But, you know, we're finding them and there are people out there, but you've got to create, everyone has to create to give someone a sense of power in their company. They got to feel like, you know, I'm doing something good here. I'm helping this. And you know, you'll get to a house now and it's, you know, it's my grandparents or something and they barely can turn on their TV with a remote. And now you're putting internet in their house and they're asking you all these questions. Well, how does my TV work? And then you're programming their TV and then,
sir, where's your fiber drop? I don't know what you're talking
and
about.
So it's just like on and on in the early one. But so, I mean, you take, and I think that's when you recruit, but you give some sort of ownership to the job and that differentiates people from each, you know, from the norm. Is that, man, I'm this means something to me. I've got to go get Mr. Tom set up. I'm going to get his internet on. I'm going to program his TV. I'm going to show you how to use a fire stick. And bam, they're rolling. But recruiting is hard because the buy-in this day it's hard to get the buy-in.
Well, look, I'm optimistic, right? You've seen sort of a reversion back to the trades, whether it's HVAC, whether it's electrical work and engineering, plumbing, things like that. You know, I was reading an article in Wall Street Journal the other day talking about HVAC, commercial HVAC technician is the fastest path out of school to $100,000 a year, six-figure salary. That same opportunity exists in our industry too, whether it's on the install side, whether it's on the technician side. Hey, even on the manufacturer service provider side, there's a lot of great opportunities. So Lance, I'll give you the final word here. I mean, if there's folks watching this for the first time, kind of considering the career path, what would you say to them?
I would say that communications, internet, electric, all this is the thing of the future and it's not going away. Find your local contractor or ISP provider and get your foot in the door. Ask them, what can you go do in college to learn more and be able to position yourself to grow in their company? And I would tell every company to have a growth plan. Not, you know, no one wants to come in and just be some do. Once I grew up the chart, I realized it was the meter reader was probably the smartest guy in the book. Yeah. He had a lunchbox with six Dr. Peppers and a couple sandwiches, and he just went all day and come back. No headache. He went home at 5. When you move up, the work comes home, right? You got to figure out how to shut it off. But so find a company that has a growth plan and then find out how you can grow to do it. My daughter was working at a new bank. It was a startup in a small town. And she was like, Dad, it's so boring here. We get like 3 customers a day. I'm like, well, it's new. I said, you know, why don't you take some online classes and then go ask the bank president what kind of classes you need to take in order to be able to grow in the bank. So she started doing that and she went from this to that. And now she's, you know, an analyst or something. So I was like, you've got to find a growth pattern, but you can't just imagine that. I mean, hard work does pay off, but you've got to be able to be recognized for your hard work. And that's the way I think that young people should look at it. Take a trade. When I was young, I know a bunch of doctors that quit and became plumbers because plumbers made more money. Yep. It was $150 to come and tell you, yeah, it stopped up. And then they said, well, you going to fix it? Oh, it's $150 to fix it too. And so I said,
and it's $150 for the part.
Right. And so next thing you know, this guy's made it, you know. So, and my slogan to my kids was, you only got to know 2 things to be a plumber, or 3. Always make it run downhill, paydays on Friday, and don't bite your nails. That's all I got.
Probably the best end to an interview I've ever had, ever, talking about plumbing and dealing with crap, I guess, is a good way to wrap it up. But Lance, I'll tell you what, Lance, it's an incredible show so far. I'm so glad we got a chance to meet in person. And, you know, look, we've got to find a way to have you back on the show because your insight is incredibly valuable for folks in the industry. And how can folks find you if they want to reach out to you?
You can find me at lance.white@kgpco.com.
There you go. Spam his email address. Thank you all for tuning in. Be sure to follow along for the rest of our coverage here at Connected America 2025.